Thank you very much, folks. Great to be here tonight. You know, I was just thinking about something backstage. Change management. Yeah, you heard me right. Change management. The department everyone loves to hate. It's like the tofu of corporate world. Nobody really knows what it does, but somehow it's always on the menu.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. This is a cold open. It's your host again, Jay Hersko. Joining me once again, I have my two partners in crime. It's going to be a fun one. Franz Alkemade.
Close.
Alkemade. Well, you know, 6-1 if it does the other. And Mike Cadell.
Howdy, y'all.
Howdy, Mike. So this week, this was prompted by a personal experience of mine. We're going to talk about the discipline that is known as change management. So I had some run-ins this week and some strong feelings. And again, this is an unscripted, so we have nothing written down. I want to start off, gents, by arguing that the idea of change management in the corporate world is a red herring. It is a distraction. I think when people say we need change management, we need more change management, we need better change management, what they're really saying is we just need to get better at communicating. And we need to find a way to get the right information at the right speed to the right amount of people. And this is me ranting, but I really do feel like people blame a lack of change management for a whole bunch of miscoms, misfires, and miscues, where I think it's unrealistic that you're never going to have enough change managers to manage all the change you have in your company.
Here's a hot take for you, Jay. Besides kind of, yes, I kind of agree with what you said. My lived experience has been when there's structured formal change management, it's frequently people in positions of responsibility abdicating part of their responsibility to somebody else and saying, put it in the plans and absolve me of that responsibility. And then if something doesn't go right, you know, we've thought about it. It's, I think, symptom of kind of distilling complex things into simple things and trying to make it trying to say, well, it's all about the bottom line of this or that or the other thing, and not dealing with the human system as human beings.
I go on, Franz.
So the issue I run into with change management structures you kind of bump into is it does two things. One, it's way too much forward planning. There's 100 teams in every company. And for somebody up on high to come in and say every team is going to do this immediately inhibits our ability to have self-organizing teams. And you're trying to kind of a bunch of circles and square plugs.
It's putting a prescriptive approach to a complex adaptive system.
In the same way when you start introducing waterfall, so you can spend a huge amount of time planning so you can try to find this picture perfect idea that you can shove down everyone's throats that hopefully works by the time you actually get done writing the novel describing it, it ignores a lot of the individual intricacies that you're going to run into. Because like Jay said, you're never going to have enough change managers for all the change that you want to have down, because then you're now asking every single manager or middle leader or team lead, whatever you want, to not only make sure the team is delivering, but hey, Daryl up in corporate said that we have a new change management that we're redoing the way we're structuring all this. So let's completely rip out everything you've been doing and shove this one on there and we'll see if it takes. And I like the organic distribution of teams. And I think it's the best way to handle it. Like if you give teams a backlog and you say, this is the backlog, you all have experience, and it can be a team that's the entire corporate like left side. If you come in there and you give them something that they need to get done, they'll eventually organize into a team that can handle it. And the more they do it, the faster they get at it. And I just don't like this idea of coming in with this super prescribed notion of how everything is supposed to fit, or how everything is supposed to be restructured.
I think Mike was onto something, right? Because a lot of times this is someone trying to offload, hey, we're doing this thing. Go make sure all the people know. And I think I call this a red herring, But it's also, I mean, we could also call it a MacGuffin, right? If I'm going to mix my metaphors, where we're chasing the idea of change management because we lack the ability to properly communicate inside of our environments, right? It's like, it's almost like an Eisenhower matrix for communication. And we should have the things that everybody needs to know now. This is the medium that we use. The things that everybody can understand with a little bit of lag, we use this medium. The things that are not honestly super important and they can get to at their own time, we go to this medium. But instead, we come up with these massive plans to say, oh, well, we have to tell all these people about things. Or we do the exact opposite and we kind of sort of roll it out to the kind of sort of people that we know or we have connections to. And then we wonder why it's poorly received. And I think we have some unrealistic expectations.
Thinking about this after you put out the call for participants, you probably saw me ranting on this about this on Slack the other day. The idea of change management is what you were getting at. There's messages. No matter what you're doing, it's very helpful to think of what messages do you want to communicate and for what end. And then it's like a couple simple things. The first one that gets lost in a lot of cases is be honest. Just be straight up about it. Don't hide. Be something that I've learned from some of the people I've been coaching the last few months is, or relearned, I should say, is the value of simplicity in my words. Working with a CIO a couple weeks ago, he looked at somebody and said, that's a lot of flowery words. What does that mean to me? And I'm like, holy shnikes, that's me too. I stop using consultant-y flowery words. Just be plain, simple, straightforward, honest. But be honest. Don't hide behind corporate speak and communicate. Clear messages, the mediums that you describe makes a lot of sense. And then collaborate and do stuff and then get feedback and adjust based on that feedback. So any sort of change is we're dealing with human beings. Human beings are complex adaptive systems, period. And even me, just one person, Mike, I'm a complex adaptive system in my own right. And the only way to meaningfully engage with a complex adaptive system is probe, sense, and respond, I think. Mm-hmm. Ben will probably call me out if I said that wrong. but any kind of dealing with change, you have to have feedback mechanisms from the population that you're working with and adapt your messages and your approach based on how your messages are landing. I saw it happen today. 5 people in a room heard the same words with the same tone, same vocal intonations. They all saw the same body language. It wasn't even the Zoom thing. And 4 of those 5 people had completely different interpretations of what that person said. No fault of anybody else.
No.
So the feedback loops from the people that from the human system you're working with are essential. And being a child of many generations of work, some years ago that wasn't part of the plan. Organizational change management, you had your plan. To Friends's point, you just rolled out your plan and you pushed all this communication to people and hey, I'm done. We did our part. And that's those stupid peons that can't listen to what I had to say.
Right. Franz, what's it like in your side of the world? Because you're in the engineering side, so it's way different. I mean, I kind of feel like you're like the Morlocks who get everything downhill.
I'm very lucky where I am now. We're not dealing with a lot of this. We're smaller teams and we kind of self-organize. One of the big times we've seen this happen in the more engineering stuff is we have a complete shift of leadership and everybody wants to come down and change everything. And usually what that means for the boots on the ground people is you're going to lose 2 or 3 weeks. Doesn't matter really much. That's it doesn't all? Matter very much how, yeah, if you're lucky. It doesn't really matter how big the changes are. At the end of the day, you're going to have every single member of your leadership panicking in some way or another. And your ability to deliver is going to be shifted because now the PMs are going to go, oh, God damn it. Do I have to go in there and now completely change the way I'm filing this in? Or do we have to cut? Oh, there's a new process for how we do it. It is a very, very expensive exercise. And yes. While I think it makes a lot of the management class of people feel that they're doing something big, at the end of the day, I very, very rarely see it make the team itself go faster. So it benefits managerial bits. It does not benefit doers. Because the doers already know what they're doing.
Yes, I think that's fair. That's
whenever I see this stuff coming in, all I know is that I'm going to have twice as many meetings. It's going to be meetings that I don't need to have. We're going to implement half of what we're asked to. We're just going to cherry pick the parts that don't negatively impact, because very seldomly do you see anything positive. And then just try to get that, just slap that circle peg in the round hole until it gets in there. Because most of the prescriptions are just there. It's a circle peg for a round hole.
I'm going to ask you guys this because I think those of us on the other side of the change, I think we need to be a little more mature with the fact that change is constant. Change is always going to happen. We as working professionals should, to your point, Mike, the complex adaptive system, we should always be on the lookout for it. And we should learn to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I think that the people who throw their hands up and say, oh my God, the process changed again. It's like, I had the remark of, yeah, I'm with you. Because yeah, that sucks. But this is not the first time this has changed. And it's not going to be the last time. So how does our own mental, I guess, elasticity when it comes to that sort of stuff, how much are we to blame with expecting, oh, well, this changed. And why did this change? And I didn't know. And where was the change management? I want to say, haven't you been living under a rock? Stuff is always going to change. And sometimes you get wind of it and sometimes you don't. But as successful professionals, you need to grab it. You know, you need to dance with the partner that they gave you.
I don't think...
Mike, go ahead, you first. Yeah, you may.
So I think the issue is not that change occurs. And I think as professionals, we all know change is occurring. I think it's the level of attachment where the change comes from. I don't care if you guys want us to update our process to make some development faster. If my direct manager comes in there and says, we've been watching you and the other three teams. I just came back from a conference. I think if we make this one little change, it'll be beneficial. And I'm in it because, you know, that's someone who's very close to the work. They understand what we're doing and they have a good understanding of what's going on. I think a lot of the problem we run into with management is it is several steps away. So it's not my manager coming in to the team to change the way that they work. It is my manager's manager's manager. And I think for the most part, we're very lucky and we've worked with really good like C-suite. And we have people who care about the stuff that we're doing and they're passionate and they want it to be successful because everybody in the company wants to be successful. But at the end of the day, the C-suite doesn't know what the web developers are doing. C-suite doesn't know engineers individually to them. And it's when there's that level of detachment that people get frustrated. And that's when it becomes expensive.
to that point, Franz, what you described is poorly executed change, perhaps well-intentioned. I mean, I'll mm-hmm. come at this with the belief, assuming positive intent, that nobody comes to work, goes to work each morning and says, I think I want to go really jack up some dude's life.
Let's make this
people
worse.
Generally come to their day saying, I'm going to try to do something I think is useful. But going back to my worst training, one of the many gems I pulled from that, this is research grounded stuff. This isn't just like, you know, somebody, you know, sitting in a rock garden made up this thing. There's 4 conditions that have to be in place for change to be successful and to take root. And I'll kind of headline them. versus new information has to enter the system. So, you know, something's got to occur to people. People don't just, you know, changes, you know, just happen. There's got to be some new information, some motivation. Then there has to be a sense of a shared purpose about the change. So in the example you offered, Franz, where the dude comes back from the conference and says, hey, this might make us, you know, our work a little bit more effective. So there's a little bit of a shared sense of purpose. And everyone has to have the opportunity to give input into how the change will occur. It's not that people don't like change. They don't like being told you're going to change and this is what you're going to change to. And then the fourth one is everyone has to understand how that input will be used and how final decisions are made. So yeah, you know what, Franz, I'm going to listen to you and all the other engineers, but at the end of the day, I'll tell you, hey, y'all make the decision, or hey, thanks for the input. It's my burden to bear. I'll make the decision and I'll tell you why. So if you don't have those four conditions, it ain't gonna stick, and it's gonna frustrate people.
I think the why becomes very important, especially with change that's coming down from up top, right? So Franz's example was the two steps, three steps abstracted person somewhere decides we're going to do something different. You know, everybody's going to type with their left hand and wear their pants on their head, right? okay. But, and I think it's unrealistic for us to expect that, you know, change not ever be done to us. But I think it puts, to your point, Mike, I think it puts the onus on the person who's trying to drive this change or enact this change to make a real hell of a good explanation as to why. And it doesn't even have to be a good explanation, but if I'm downstream and I'm going to have to eat this sandwich, this crap sandwich, or maybe it's not a crap sandwich, maybe it's a good sandwich, who knows? I should know why. You should be telling me why. So I think the first step in any change, big, small, right, wrong, and different, is explain to people what you're looking to accomplish. And they can agree or disagree, but at least you have made the argument that from where we are sitting, we see this as a solution to that. We are doing this for in service of that. And I think everybody, I don't think everybody should dig their feet and say, no, but maybe, but I also think that should open up the opportunity to, hey, you said you're trying to solve this problem and your suggested solution is A, what if I could offer you B, which will also solve the problem, but makes better sense. That to your point, Mike, that I guess it's back to safety, right? That safety to know that I'm trying to drive this change from the top, but you need to be open-minded to, what if Franz comes out of the development bullpen and says, hey, this doesn't work for us, but this thing over here does, and I still scratch your itch?
Yeah. That's when you get effective change. And that gets back to that feedback loop, right? You got to have feedback. Franz, you hit on something that kind of resonated for me about, I forget exactly what you said, but what it brought to mind for me is what my lived experience has been, that if you want to see real change happen in a group of people or an organization, the most effective thing you can do is change how decisions are made, which gets back to, which comes down to how did people make decisions? They make it based off, quite frankly, what's in their own best interest. Whether I keep my job or I do what I act based on what my boss asks me about.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I was talking to a client 3 or 4 weeks ago, and he was kind of struggling with, well, you know, the CIO stood up and said blah, 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 but then nobody's doing blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, in his staff meetings, how often does he follow up and ask questions about that? Oh, we never talk about that. Well, yeah. That's why you're not seeing it happen, because it's not getting, you know, kind of the emphasis. And that gets back to, you know, I'm incented to do what my boss asked me about, or what my bonus is based on, or both.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is I need to change the decision-making process from having everybody involved to only myself involved. And then we can start fixing all the decision-making problems.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked in places where we would love, I mean, even if it's someone who's domineering, just somebody who's going to make a decision. Because quite often, I've been in places where we end up kind of just sitting there staring at each other because we escalate the decision into a room full of people who everybody wants responsibility. Nobody wants to be responsible. So because of that, we end up with this really wicked whirlpool of decision-making whack-a-mole. And not even whack-a-mole. Decision-making, don't get me started. Decision-making hot potato, where everybody wants to, well, let's see what Franz thinks. I don't know. Let's see what Mike thinks. I don't know. Let's see what John thinks. And we end up doing these giant like loops. And still at the end of the day, we still have a decision that needs to be made.
So it's very fun to mention that. One of the least pleasant things I find I've had to do a lot of. I started moving into the more of the managerial positions where you're overseeing a couple of teams. Is we have all been in the scrum call. It goes, who would like to do this story? Or who would like to be the person to make this decision? And if you do know somebody in there who is aggressively going, this is the decision, it doesn't even have to be the right one. You could say something that is obviously wrong, but if you see that wrong answer, all of a sudden everybody starts talking. Nobody wants to be that first person. And the best thing I've seen in like my agile development journey and just my developer journey is always be that first guy. Because even if it's wrong, no one's like, oh, Fraud's always had the bad idea. They're going to go, yeah, but we got the thing figured out. Like, that's the important part.
It's like reverse anchoring. Either you want to go, it's reverse anchoring.
I would like to clarify, I do not shoot wrong answer on purpose. However, I have found that just being a guy going in there and giving literally any response will get the conversation moving faster.
That's not wrong. That's not wrong, especially in a room full of introverts, right? Like, I gave a lecture the other night, and one of the students asked me, if you're engaging with the customer for this project, and they said they don't have the time to meet with you frequently, how would you handle that? And I said, well, let's say the customer is requesting a website, and they said, well, I don't have the time to meet with you about this website. I would give it a sprint, and I would give them the ugliest, jankiest, most screwed up looking website they've ever seen in their lives. And when they say, what is this? I'd say, well, we didn't know you didn't want to be involved. And maybe that forces them to get involved. I said, that's only when you're established. But my suggestion was, if I'd say to the customer, I need your help. How frequently can we talk? Whatever answer they give, cut it in half. If they say I can get together once a week, you say, how about every 2 days? If they say I can do every 2 days, you say, how about every other day? How about every day for 15 minutes? I've done it myself and it's worked. Whatever they suggest, cut it in half. Cut it in half.
I think back loops.
Yeah. Yeah. It's taking that first step. Like one of the things that got me pretty far was everybody will tell you, I'll go put something on that calendar and we can meet up tomorrow. Don't say that. Say, I've put something on the calendar. Does that time look good? Because if people get stuck in the analysis paralysis where they don't want to get anything moving forward. And then you can't have, we're talking about change and making good decisions and whatnot. But if you keep telling everybody, well, I will later schedule a meeting where we can start figuring out the change that needs to take place. Spoiler alert. That meeting is never going to get scheduled. Mm-mm. No one's going to go out of their way to go, oh man, I'd really like to add a bunch of work that may not pay out onto my calendar. That's exciting. You got to be the guy slapping stuff in calendars.
Yes, that's fair. Like, hey, we're not leaving this room until we have the next one scheduled. And even better is if we have the next one scheduled, we have a loose agenda. Yeah.
I will say, because you brought up agendas, I don't know what it was, some article about I will not go to a meeting if it doesn't have an agenda. And I have been that has been bouncing around in my head for like 2.5 months. It's like, what would actually happen if I said we need some kind of agenda in a meeting invite? Because I think the amount of meetings we'd have would probably drop significantly. Like, especially in corporate America. Like, I'm much more close to code now, right? Like, I'm literally overseeing just dev team. And then I speak with the client. Like, that's where I am right now. But when I was in corporate America, if I could go in there and say, all right, you want to put a 20 minute on there and we want to book a conference room, make sure to send the agenda or we're not going to have the meeting. I can't imagine what that would do. It keeps stuff more on. I wish I could still do.
Give you some hope. For probably as long as electronic calendaring has existed, I've held myself to the discipline that if I request somebody's time in the meeting invite, is a clear statement of the objective or the outcome of the meeting. Not necessarily an agenda. I kind of sort of don't believe in agendas, but I do value outcomes. Like, we're going to get together. This is what we're going to try to, this is what we hope to accomplish. If I understand that, cool. If I don't, I have done this. I like to somebody who's like two levels above me. I didn't like decline the meeting, but I replied as tentative and asked what my contribution to the meeting would be so that I could come prepared and not waste the company's time and money. And a little softer way. And you know, if you do that and you get the tar knocked out of you for it, it's a pretty good sign you need to be somewhere else.
So I will tell you this, Franz, a real life example, no exaggeration. When I was at a credit card company in Wilmington, and our CEO put out an email to every employee in the building. We were still in the office. We had two buildings, about 4,000 people. Meeting etiquette. And he said flat out, no meetings before 9:30 a.m. Everyone needs to come in and get settled. No meetings after 4:30. Everyone needs to be able to wrap their day up and go home. All meetings need to end 5 minutes before the scheduled time to give people time to get to the next meeting.
I love the dual ones.
Every meeting defaults to 30 minutes. If you are going to schedule an hour, you need to have an agenda published no less than 48 hours before the meeting, or else your attendees can decline without response. Nothing over lunch, 12 to 1. Anything over lunch needed to be catered. Any meeting longer than an hour needed to be broken up in the middle with a 10-minute break. And he basically said, I look forward to helping all of you be successful in everything you're trying to do. And there were people who hemmed and hawed, but a good chunk of us were like, hell yeah. And it made life so much better. You're not scrambling into first thing in the morning. You're not going into a meeting that runs late where your brain is leaking out your ears. You're not missing your lunch. And you know what? I would argue it's like constraining whip in a system. I think we were more effective when we did get into the room because it was me, Franz, and Mike. We walked in, we had an agenda, we knew we had a time box, and we got the hell out of there.
Work with a bunch of Brits, they'll do that by default.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Hey, how do we get on meeting agendas from change? Just curious.
We were talking about positive change, and then
the meeting to discuss the change, and then we kind of wavered from there. But so bringing us back to change management, I think, and I've worked with some really good change managers. Like I really have. I'm not shitting on the discipline. I hope nobody thinks that. It is tough, right? It is tough. You're always telling people things that they don't necessarily want to hear about things they don't necessarily want to do. So I have the utmost respect for change managers. I don't take umbrage with change managers. I take umbrage with, I think Franz nailed it with the leadership aspect of expecting change management for everything. And I really take umbrage with my peers and my colleagues, co-colleagues, when they get mad because where was the change management on this? I mean, look, you're not always going to nail it. Sometimes stuff's going to...
Yeah, never mind. It's part of the thing. It's not a separate thing. It's just part of the thing.
Yeah. And the bigger companies you get into, the harder it is because you have more weird little cul-de-sacs that you need to get the message into. So you either wait and don't make a change until you acknowledge that everybody's learned of it, which is unrealistic, or the exact opposite end of that pendulum is you just fire shit into production and say, LOL, sorry, you know? You want to shoot for the happy medium where you get as much surface area as you can, aware of what's going on, and then you kind of just got to go for it.
Here's a great illustration of how change management, scare quotes, can actually be done reasonably well. I was running an art sync for a release train Monday, and a product manager said, "Hey, thing X is going to require people in the sales center to have some training because we're going to change the way they do something that they do like 1,000 times a day." I was like, "Cool, dude. Thanks for pointing that out." And like, they're still right. They haven't even really started writing the code yet. So now a product manager has taken that nugget of information and is working with the person who runs all the sales centers to figure out how to sequence the deployment of that new thing in a way that the people in the sales centers actually have time to see it, play with it in a quasi-production environment, get some training on it, and then roll it into day-to-day use. And all that's done without a whole lot of hubbaloo. Just, tip a hat to Ginger, who's probably not listening, but Ginger said, "Hey, this is going to affect these people. We need to let somebody know." And then somebody else took the initiative and off they went. And it's organically being communicated and dealt with. And this is in a company that's not, quote, really agile yet. So it's just common sense.
You bring up a good point, Mike. I mean, and that's one thing that I don't want to be too glib when it comes to, like, I've worked with call centers, right? Where you can't, those are the kind of people where I will say you can't just blindside them with changes. If it's, app changes to the UI when they're looking up calls, they have handle time, they got to worry about resolution time. But I think there is and I've worked in places where they hit that sweet spot where they got into the groove, where they knew how to, the strong connection, weak connection stuff. They knew what nodes they needed to get the information to that would help it organically get out into the enterprise. So by the time the change actually rolled out with the official release notes, everybody was like, "I already knew that was coming. I already knew that was coming. I was already looking for that field. What took you so long?"
Yeah. That didn't require like a whole massive plan. It just required common sense, someone paying attention to the implications of their work and saying, "Hey, let's just communicate and collaborate and do stuff." And they'll get feedback and they'll adjust.
Yeah.
There's another concept that kind of sprung to mind when you threw out the topic of change management. And this is something I picked up from a previous employer. It kind of relates to change management and how you think about, how do you change management? And it goes, if your mindset establishes your measures, and then your measures lead to the mechanics, then the mechanics reflect the mindset. So how you think about change is reflected in how you actually conduct your business.
Change, yeah.
And let's face it, the way work is done, the way a business is operated is largely determined by what the organization chooses to measure.
That's fair.
So if you want to see, if you think about change in a healthy way, your mechanics of change management will reflect that. If you don't think about it in a healthy way, I think you might struggle a little bit.
Yeah, you're fair. That's fair. Grzentz, are quickly coming up on time. I knew we were gonna make this a quick one. Franz, any final thoughts?
Make change in small increments and it'll go way easier. It's about the best I can offer. I think a lot of times we try to do way too much too quick with the wrong people, and it backfires. And if we get a little bit more time and communicate with more of the immediate people who are impacted, we could probably solve a bunch of issues we run into with change management.
Well said. Mike, final thoughts?
Yeah, going back to something I said earlier, be honest, communicate, collaborate, do stuff, get feedback, and adjust. It's a complex adaptive system. Treat it like that. Don't treat it like a simple ordered system.
Nah. I will just say, just treat people the way you'd want to be treated.
Ooh, well, yeah.
Right? Just treat people the way you want to be treated. If you don't like change sprung on you, don't spring it on other people. It's not a tit-for-tat game, because those games don't end. They don't end very well. All right, everybody. Thank you, Mike and Franz, for dialing in from remote locations. From you know, Mike is in Boogie Woogie and Franz is in God knows where. I want to thank all of our watchers, listeners, for tuning in again. And hope to see you again next week. The Agile Uprising podcast saying cheers, peace. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
See you, everybody.